You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
I thought that I was in heaven, but I was sure surprised. Heaven help me, I didn't see the devil in your eyes. You look like an angel, walk like an angel, talk like an angel, but I got wise.
Probably a song that anybody born in the 1950s could sing about the United States government. And I've got to say this too. I mentioned it at the tail end of the first hour, and we've got another great guest on this hour, and we're going to be primarily talking about the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. I want to say again, watching his reaction as that verdict was read, watching him break down, I mean, really brought a tear to my eye as well. This is a kid who fought, stared down the Leviathan that is our federal government, our corrupt and wicked federal government. And make no mistake about it, the prosecution in the Rittenhouse trial was the federal government manifested. And the fact that they would allow city after city after city to burn and not do anything to curtail the anarchy and the arson and the looting and the rioting, and then go after with hammer and tong this kid who was defending himself, is just sick beyond my capacity for words. But we'll talk about that with Paul Ray Ramsey now. Ramsey Paul, perhaps you know him as, a longtime friend of mine as well, and one of our best commentators. What a satirist he is, and he kills him with humor. He's a YouTuber, very popular commentator on any number of issues, and it's always great to welcome him back to the show. Paul, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, I'm doing well, and I'm living in the South now. I'm in Arkansas, so I'm really loving it. So thank you for having me on.
Well, and thank you for being on, and again, welcome to the South. I think the last time you were on, you had already moved, but it's great. I'll say again what we said last time. We got to get together more often. You're just right over the river now. We'll ford that river and get together. That we can do. But
anyway. Yeah, I'm in the Ozark Mountains. I'm in the Ozark Mountains. It's beautiful here.
That's fantastic. Yes, Northwest Arkansas. Yeah, it's a beautiful country, and I know you're happy there, and we're happy to have you. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, I guess I should mention I'll be on with Paul this week. We're doing another one of these Home and Home series, and I'll be on with Paul on Tuesday night, so stay tuned for that. Well, anyway, Paul, we're going to be talking about Rittenhouse, but first, I had received some word, and I appreciate you saying these things. You had compared and contrasted the style of yours truly and Jared Taylor with some of the people who sadly are some of the defendants in Charlottesville. I don't want to spend a lot of time on Charlottesville this hour, but maybe a 60-second or 2-minute salvo from you on your take on all of that, on the trial and just all of it as the jury is now in deliberation. They went into deliberation, as you probably know, on Friday morning. They did not come to a verdict or any sort of judgment on Friday. They will go back to court and resume deliberations at 9 a.m. on Monday Eastern time. And I would expect Monday. I thought it was a puncher's chance, 50-50, that they'd reach a verdict on Friday so they wouldn't have to come back through the weekend on a holiday week. And to my pleasant surprise, I guess. I don't know if it's good or bad, but they will be back on Monday. So your thoughts on the Charlottesville trial, just maybe a minute on that, and then we'll get to Rittenhouse.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care for all of the defendants, but it is simply outrageous that they're trying to criminalize free speech. These guys, they went there, they had their opinions. You may agree with them, you may not, but they had a right to speak, and they had a legal permit. There was no conspiracy, I believe, whatsoever to cause anyone violence. In fact, most of these people, they didn't know the James Fields. They had no idea who he was. They were there and they wanted to Well, they had various agendas, but it was to support the Southern statues and other things. But the point is, even if you don't care for the speech, as an American, you have a right to speak. And I think the goal of these trials, there's a few of these trials going on now, and they're really show trials, they're political trials. And it's sad to see this happening right now in America, because really what the federal government wants to do is say, if you're on the right, you don't really have a right to protest even peacefully, because we're going to, or they're going to put the standard, if you give a protest, you attend a protest or you organize a protest, if anyone that shows up causes problems, you're liable. And that's just outrageous. I know Nick Fuentes, he ran into that problem. He can't get insurance anywhere to give his speeches. I know he was going to do a speech against mandatory mandates at various rallies, but the government said, well, you got to get insurance before you do it because it's too risky. And every insurance place says, no, we're not going to insure you. And this is a private sector, so you're out of luck. So it's a way for them to de facto end the First Amendment. And that's really, I believe, the goal of the government, is to say, if you're on the right, you do not have the right to a free speech in this country.
That's excellent commentary, Paul, on that. And a good friend of mine, Brad Griffin, who was also there at Charlottesville, wrote this week, and that is, according to the plaintiff's attorneys, according to the media, we all came to Charlottesville to engage in pointless violence with Antifa. It was our goal to be deplatformed from the internet. We wanted to get sued in federal court. We wanted all that bad publicity. We wanted to be denounced by Congress. We wanted some of our people to be railroaded by the FBI and the DOJ. We wanted people to get doxxed and fired from their jobs. We wanted and brought our women to the event to get pepper sprayed. We brought a bunch of elderly men to the event to brawl with Antifa. We wanted our friends to go to prison. We wanted to have legal and medical bills that we can't afford. That's what we set out to do by holding the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville. Of course, he's saying that tongue in cheek, but that is in actuality the narrative by the plaintiff's attorneys and by the media, of course, which serves as the mouthpiece for the regime or the system. And we had a guest on, a good friend of mine, who'll be back on in the third hour as well, Rich Hamblin, who testified in Charlottesville this week, and he was asked during cross-examination by the plaintiff's attorneys, what were you there for? You were there to engage in violence, right? No, I was there to stand up for the Lee Monument. I'm basically paraphrasing. That's not an exact quote, but that was pretty much the exchange, and that's what the people, so many of them, were there for, the vast majority anyway. Of course, when you have 5,000 people or however many was that ended up turning out, you're going to have some bad actors. You're going to have people there that are there for ill-intended reasons. But I can speak for Rich, who testified this week in Charlottesville. He was there for the stated purpose, to defend the monument of his hero, to stand in solidarity with the hero of our nation, Robert E. Lee. And that's it. And all this other stuff, that's just, as you said, it's just ridiculous to assume that they went there for all the things that they got in return.
Yeah, and as one persuasive argument, as I think, is the people that went to the United the Right, they had a permit and they went there, and it was the Antifa, which are a bunch of communists. They're the ones that showed up and caused trouble. It wasn't like they were given a rally and a bunch of right-wing people just showed up unannounced and tried to start issues.
Yeah.
They were the ones that came to be aggressive.
We are actually going to revisit that in the third hour. We're going to have a final assessment and summation by the time we come back on the air next week. This is all going to be decided. We'll tell you what the verdicts are, but that's it as far as commentary is concerned. And I'm going to revisit this with Rich, and we're going to touch a little bit more on what you just said right there, Paul. But when we come back with Ramsey Paul.
The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government, and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
The spirit of the American West is live and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues affecting the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like the 2021 Real Buckaroo Calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Well, my mom smokes and my dad smokes, and I saw them smoking, so I tried it. They're telling me not to smoke, but they smoke themselves.
When it comes to smoking, are you sending mixed signals?
But when you teach someone a certain way to do things and you go back on that certain way, it sends mixed signals to the person that they're trying to teach. The parents need to be the example.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Mom, you don't know anything about me anymore.
Honey, I know you're good at math. You don't like English. I know Ryan smiled at you yesterday at school. I know your favorite color is purple. And I know you don't like mushrooms. And who can blame you? I mean, mushrooms are a fungus, and people generally try to avoid funguses. Or is it fungi? I'm never quite sure. But, you know, either way, I mean, penicillin is good.
Penicillin is a mold.
Huh. Well, I guess you're right. So you like penicillin, but not mushrooms.
No matter what you talk about, love is what they'll hear.
Mom, If we talk, will you be quiet?
Love to.
A thought from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Visit us at Mormon.org.
Well, again, Godspeed to the defendants in Charlottesville. If the plaintiff's attorneys were really concerned about any injuries that their clients may have sustained, they would have gone after the people responsible for the violence that day. That's the city of Charlottesville itself. Very, very interesting that the Heafy report was not admitted into evidence, was not allowed to be cited. This is their own city-sanctioned investigative report was not allowed to be cited because it exonerates the defendants and puts blame rightly where it should be for the violence that day. And that's with Antifa, and then for the police for not doing their jobs. Well, anyway, we'll let that be the word on Charlottesville for now. Let's shift to Kyle Rittenhouse. Amazing, Ramsey Paul. What'd you think? I mean, I shared my thoughts at the beginning of the hour, my reaction to it, what I felt as though he was up against, and the relief that I had to see this kid have his moment in court. What was your reaction in watching that, your reaction to the verdict? And let's start there.
I was joyous. I'm still smiling. I prayed God. I know a lot of us prayed for him because this kid did everything right. He was a Boy Scout. He went there to clean up graffiti. He wasn't there for trouble. And the lies and the gaslighting by the media and the people is brazen. It just really amazes me how they're trying to do this narrative that he took an assault weapon, a machine gun, across state lines, and he went down to Kenosha to hunt down people, and he saw these peaceful protesters, and he decided to shoot at them, and these three brave men tried to stop him, but he shot them too. That's literally what they're trying to say. Oh, and that the men, you know, for the longest time, the media told many people, they gave the impression that he shot black men. And so they tried to make this into a racial thing.
I should say something about that. Is that that was what was interesting to me. Now, I do have my opinion, and you can feel free to agree or disagree. I am glad I said this in the first time. I may have said it earlier this hour. I've said it a couple of times. I'm glad that the establishment conservatives got behind Rittenhouse. He deserved it. He deserved it all the way. But if he had shot black people, I do not think that they would have been behind him at all. I think they would have dropped him like a hot potato, and you would have never, or there would have not been the support that he got from the Republican Party and members like Marjorie Taylor Greene, et cetera. Had the people that he had shot in self-defense happened to be black, they happened to be white and or Jewish. But still, he was labeled as this white supremacist. Now, he had never been involved with any conservative group or any sort of organization or anything that would malign him with the taint that all of us are given by our detractors. He was, as you said, he was an absolute Boy Scout. And so the fact that he is known, that Joe Biden has called him a white supremacist, that he is regularly cited as being a white supremacist. Well, of course, I heard last week that Michelle Malkin is a white supremacist. You don't have to be white anymore to be a white supremacist. So it doesn't necessarily mean what you think it means. But, this whole thing with him being a white supremacist, I mean, race had nothing to do. He didn't even shoot people that were of another race. I don't understand where the white supremacist narrative came from in his case.
You know, white supremacist is like the phrase witch in the Middle Ages. It's just a slur. It doesn't even mean anything logically.
Amen.
And you're right. And you're right. Michelle Malkin is a white supremacist. I'm sure they call other black conservatives they have called white supremacists. It's ridiculous. It has nothing to do with white people trying to be supreme. All it means is that you're a white person that is either conservative or you're on the right. But de facto, they call you a white supremacist. That's all it means. And they saw a kid that defended himself, so obviously he has to be a white supremacist. And you're right. If they had anything on him, they would have brought that up in the trial. I mean, the worst they could bring up was, and I was laughing, but did you hear he played video games? And in those video games, you shoot people in the games.
Well, there's some memes out there on that regard that are just killer. No pun intended. That are great, I should say. But there are, but no, they didn't have anything. But you know, the fact that, you know, and this was something that was brought up with Dylann Roof, and I've still never seen evidence to this effect, but allegedly, and we'll take the government's word for it, of course, Dylann Roof had at one time, one day, gone to the Council of Conservative Citizens website, and because of that, that's what inspired him to do what he did in Charleston. They didn't even have something as flimsy as that Rittenhouse, but it still didn't stop them from, of course, referring to him as a white supremacist. They'll do that with any evidence or manufactured evidence or no evidence at all. But what do you think it was, Paul, that caused everyone to be so captivated with this particular case? I mean, because it was everybody on our side, on the other side, every side in between, and throughout the middle, everybody was fixated on this case, certainly much more so than the Arbery case or the McMichaels case in Georgia and the Charlottesville case. Rittenhouse was the one that everybody was focused on. Why was that, in your opinion?
Oh, well, we had a lot of good video, and he was young, and so there's a lot of compelling narratives and storylines that makes for good entertainment, and the media is about entertainment. And so I think that's what compelled people. Now, from the left, this was important to them because their idea, and I state, like BLM and Antifa, they are de facto paramilitaries run by people in the establishment. I don't believe they act independently. And by the way, there hasn't been many riots that has happened after this verdict, right? Isn't that interesting how they're able to prevent Kenosha from burning down now, and they have the National Guard out now? Well, why is that? Why weren't they out in 2020? It's strictly political because they're trying to discredit Donald Trump.
Absolutely. I mean, the fact, well, and Trump, I got to say, he should have done more to stop all of that. I mean, they burned over 100 cities afflicted with this BLM Antifa terrorism in Trump's final year on the watch. And I think he should have and could have done more. But nevertheless, why weren't the cities themselves, the city government themselves, and it was mostly Democratic cities that were being burnt.
Right.
Why weren't they doing more? And you could say, okay, well, why was Rittenhouse there? Did he really have any reason to be there? Okay, you could probably argue no, but did the terrorists have any reason to be there burning down the city and looting the city and rioting in the city? No. And why didn't the city government of Kenosha stop the threat before Rittenhouse showed up? So you could argue that any which way you can, but the incident itself that caused the charges was purely self-defense. That's not even obviously debatable anymore. He's been completely found not guilty.
Yeah, that's correct. So, and I think for our side, it was important because – is the question, do we have a right to legally defend ourselves? And the case, if I was on the jury, would have been very simple, because I would just get down. I don't care anyone's backgrounds. I mean, one of the guys that was shot was a child molester, and Rittenhouse was a Boy Scout, but that's all pretty much irrelevant. What's relevant is what actually happened. And it's not really up to debate. We have video on this. He was fleeing from them. They attacked him. They're trying to bash him over the head with a skateboard, which, by the way, is like a club. People have been killed with skateboards. It's a weapon. Antifa uses skateboards a lot because it's a plausible deniability that it's a weapon. And they say, oh, I don't really have a weapon. I just enjoy being on a skateboard. So that's why they use it. Another guy had a gun. So Rittenhouse was attacked, and he was defending himself. It was classic textbook self-defense. If it was as a narrative like the media is trying to make it out to be, sure, I would support him being convicted. If he just went down there and randomly started to shoot at peaceful protesters, yeah, I'd be outraged. I don't care if they were communist or left-wingers or whatever. I would say, yeah, convict him. That's outrageous if he would do something like that. He didn't do that. He was peaceful. He didn't shoot at anyone until they attacked him. They were the aggressors.
And you know what?
It's not up for debate.
Well, I just was going to say, if he had not taken his instrument of self-defense to that particular night's festivities or peaceful protest or whatever you call when the left is burning down the city, he'd been dead. And he'd have been dead, yeah. And you never heard a word about it.
Yep.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to expand the roundtable again. We're going to have another special guest joining Ramsey Paul. We're going to talk a segment about Ahmaud Arbery and the McMichaels case in Georgia. And then we're going to bring it all into full circle. All of these cases, all of these trials happening simultaneously, has dominated the last month of radio. We'll bring it to summation, so stay tuned.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News.
I'm Brad Bernards. U.S. bank regulator nominee Sally Omarova denied allegations of communist sympathies during a contentious Senate hearing on Thursday as her appointment looked increasingly in doubt amid skepticism from key moderate Democrats. Republican Louisiana Senator John Kennedy.
This is America. But I don't mean any disrespect. I don't know whether to call you professor or comrade.
Chuck Schumer wants the Senate to pass President Joe Biden's social spending plan before Christmas. Standing in his way is the chamber's long to-do list, its rules referee, and more likely than not, Joe Manchin. The House on Friday morning passed $1.7 trillion in new funding to expand the social safety net, sending it to the upper chamber after months of infighting. This is USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Wayne Alaroot for Patriot VPN. Patriot VPN is a virtual private network service that uses military-grade encryption to protect your internet connection on all of your devices. With Patriot VPN, your data and internet privacy is secure anywhere in the world. Why do you need Patriot VPN? Cyber criminals, government, even your own internet service provider collect and use your private information without your knowledge. Examples in the news recently, remember all the companies that have been hacked? Cuba censored the internet to kill protests? Here in America, conservative groups are being actively targeted. Your personal information and internet history is being sold by your ISP. It's all happening every day, but not with Patriot VPN. With Patriot VPN, your internet activity and history is protected from prying eyes forever. Patriot VPN is a veteran-owned business right here in the USA. For business or your family, starting at only $6.95 a month, use code WAR and get 3 months free. With an annual subscription, it's all at patriotvpn.com. That's patriotvpn.com.
Stop me if you've heard this before, but it's the busiest travel week coming up of the... Well, okay, you've heard it before, but it is a very busy travel week with Thanksgiving coming up Thursday, and some stormy weather is expected to affect a lot of people's travels. In the Midwest and later the upper Northeast, there will be heavy rain and high winds. Starting off the week, the conditions could cause air travel delays, just as tens of thousands of people across the nation are starting to head out for Thanksgiving. Travelers are advised to keep an eye on their airline's webpage to check for any possible flight delays. The IRS says almost all of the money it has seized through their criminal investigations unit over the past fiscal year was cryptocurrency, the unit recovering $3.5 billion in crypto over the fiscal year. That amounts to 93% of all its overall seizures. The Bureau is saying it expects it'll seize even more crypto next year. And this is USA Radio News.
Close your eyes and I'll kiss you. Tomorrow I'll miss you. Remember, I'll always be true. And then while I'm away, I'll write home every day, and I'll send all my loving to you. I'll pretend that I'm kissing the lips I am missing, and hope that my dreams will come true. And then while I'm away, I'll write home every day, and I'll send all my loving to you.
Well, this would probably be the part of the show where I would ask Keith Alexander if we were better off in 1964 or today. But, of course, if we've gotten a couple of emails, where's Keith tonight? Well, you just check the Ole Miss football calendar, and you'll know where Keith is tonight. But... Okay, we're at the halfway point of the show, and it's been a great show so far. I want to remind you that, again, coming up in the third hour, I'm going to bring Rich Hamblin, who testified in Charlottesville earlier this week, back onto the show. We're going to offer a final assessment and a final summation on the Charlottesville trial and the Unite the Right rally in general before we get the verdict, which I will expect will be Monday. It will certainly be before Thanksgiving. So by the time we're back on with you next week at this time, we'll know the tale of the tale. And we have been talking with Ramsey Paul, ramseypaul.com, and we'll get Paul to give us all of his contact information before the end of the hour, primarily about the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, and we are going to revisit that before the end of this hour. So just stick around if that's confusing, because you'll see how it all plays out. There's a method to the madness. But first, we're going to talk about Ahmaud Arbery, and because there are so many trials of interest going on concurrently, we've gone deep to the bench, and we've gotten our good friend Courtney from Alabama to monitor the Arbery trial for us. She called in last week to talk about it. She's going to talk about it a little bit more tonight. But first, Courtney, say hello to Paul. I know you and Paul are at least acquainted, and I know you watch his shows and his live streams regularly, so say hello, why don't you?
Hey, Paul. I'd love to... I'd like to brag to the audience that I had the honor of several years back, I had the honor of sharing a banquet table with him at Ameren, I think on two occasions. And of course, you know, I love his videos. They're hilarious. they always make me laugh. And I love Sasha too. I mean, I love her stuff too. She's into the 80s and so am I. I like stuff like that. So I enjoy watching both of you.
Well, thank you. And yeah, I've met Courtney and we got along great, and it's great to hear from you, Courtney.
I don't even think I told you, Paul. I told Warren that Rich would be on in the first hour, or two first hour guests. I don't think I told you, Paul, that we would have Courtney. So perhaps that's a surprise, but I'm glad you remember, or else that would be awkward.
Courtney's yeah, always been one of my favorites. Yeah, when I heard you were bringing on Courtney, I'm like, could it be Courtney from Alabama?
And that's her birthday, too. I mean, people think that we're just saying she's from Alabama, but her middle name is From and her last name is Alabama. So that's it. But no, it is the one and only Courtney from Alabama. So, Paul, yeah, I mean, maybe you're the one who should be honored, Paul, that you're on with the Courtney
I am honored. Courtney was a real sweetheart when I met her, and we always got along great. So this is we got to keep in touch, Courtney. Send me an email sometime.
Yeah, I need to start catching your live streams. I do.
Catch it on Tuesday night, Courtney, because I'll be the guest. And, the SPLC was right about one thing, and that was that I am the nexus. I mean, I bring people together. What else can I do? This is as they said in The Godfather, this is the job that we chose. And so, anyway, it's great to have you both here with us tonight. Paul, let me ask you very quickly. Have you been following the McMichaels-Arbery trial in Georgia at all? I mean, comparative to Charlottesville and Rittenhouse?
You know, not as much. And I have a friend that is, and my understanding basically this jogger was out there, and they tried to do a citizen arrest, which was legal at the time in Georgia. And this gentleman then resisted and grabbed the shotgun by the barrel, and it went off, and he was killed. That's basically all I know of the case. At the
right. Okay, so that's the general picture. But here's something that I received from a trial attorney who has been following this case. And he's been following this case, and he's been watching it, as has Courtney. So Courtney's been watching this as she's been listening to Charlottesville. I mean, she's really been everywhere. And that's why we're bringing her back on tonight for consecutive weeks, which even after all these years, I don't think we've done before. But this is what this attorney wrote to me. I've learned many things about the R. Barry McMichael incident that I did not know before, and that's coming from the evidence that has been presented in court. Number one, that R. Barry had been caught on film four times entering the house in question at night, not jogging. Number two, that R. Barry was walking into the house the fifth time on the day of the shooting, that he only ran when a neighbor accosted him, that when R. Barry was accosted by the neighbor, he didn't jog, he sprinted away. Number three, that R. Barry had acted like he had a gun in a previous confrontation with Travis McMichael. So the day that of the fateful shooting was not their first encounter. R. Barry had acted like he had a gun in a previous confrontation with Travis McMichael, who was, I guess, basically serving as sort of a neighborhood watchman, and was reported that was reported to the police at the time, weeks before the day of the shooting. Number four, that the McMichaels had lost sight of R. Barry on the day of the shooting and were parked waiting for the arrival of the police, whom they had called when R. Barry ran around the corner and charged their truck and then charged Travis McMichael. He reached for the gun, and that's what caused the shooting. National Public Radio has run an advertisement of some social justice organization for months, again and again, which says that R. Barry was murdered because he was jogging. One has to wonder, in listening to the unvaried lies of the system media, do they teach a class in journalism school on how to empty yourself of all integrity and morality before you can be hired? Those are the facts of the case, and if those facts are considered by this jury, you're going to have another verdict that's going to run afoul of the left. And Courtney, you've been watching this trial. What do you say to that?
Yeah, I've been trying to keep up with what's going on in the courtroom, and I hope I'm answering your question. But yeah, I've been keeping up with what's been going on in the courtroom. It's just, it's really odd. It's a circus show in there. You know, I know we focus a lot of times on, you know, what the jury decides, and it comes down to them. I know it always comes down to the jury, but as far as like, who do we blame when a verdict goes wrong? I put a lot of blame on, you know, judges making bad choices, and how scummy is the prosecution and how experienced is the defense. And with the Chauvin trial and the Charlottesville trial, I mean, those judges made terrible calls that I thought, you know, greatly influenced the decisions of the jury. In this trial, it's hard to tell, you know, because I came on last week kind of, you know, defending the defense attorneys. They're real, you know, they're older Southern men making up the defense side mostly, the defense attorneys. And some of them are quote unquote good old boys, as liberals like to call them. I thought they made good points, but then media loves to make fun of them because they'll say something off color or racist or something. And so, yeah, I supported the defense attorneys last week. And then throughout the week, I started seeing, okay, yeah, I supported these guys, but they are saying things that are a little ridiculous in the courtroom. Sometimes they seem a little experienced. Now I'm a little embarrassed. Maybe the, you know, and I gave the judge a hard time last week for, you know, being kind of biased towards the prosecution. And, you know, it seemed like he was kind of condescending to the defense attorneys. But after watching it more, I was like, well, maybe the judge is right in this case, and the defense attorneys really are inexperienced. But now it seems like these defense attorneys really are smarter than they've been given credit for. The one in particular that keeps drawing attention to himself and saying quote unquote racist things. Apparently he may have done that on purpose in order to attract a crowd outside the courthouse and to move for a mistrial. There has been so much discussion in the courtroom about mistrials. The defense attorneys keep trying to fight for them. And so So basically, it is a very interesting case. It's really hard for me to figure the judge out if he's left-leaning or if he's just really sensible, and the defense attorneys are really the issue. I don't know, but I'm coming into this biased. You know, I support the McMichaels, obviously, so I want to support the defense attorneys, too, and say they're the ones that are right, and the judge is biased towards the prosecution. That's what I want to say, but it would be interesting to get other opinions of other people who have watched the trial. I hope I answered your question.
No, you did fine. You did fine. Okay. I would ask you, Paul, as we come up on this break, has it been any, have you noticed what I've noticed? And that is that you have these three incredibly important trials, I think, with regards to Rittenhouse, obviously, because of the Second Amendment, Charlottesville, with regard to freedom of speech and assembly, and then the Arbery and McMichael's trial for good measure. These are three trials that happened in three different states over the course of four years. They all came to trial at the same time, and they're all reaching a verdict at the same time. I don't know if that means anything or it's just a very interesting coincidence, but we'll get Ramsey Paul's take on that when we come back, and we'll ask Courtney to stick around as well, and we'll get all of Ramsey Paul's contact information. We'll go back to Rittenhouse for a final thought. Anything Ramsey Paul hasn't said yet that he wants to say, we're going to give him the opportunity to do that. One of my favorite commentators, a great guy, Ramsey Paul. One more segment, so stay tuned.
I have a question. Can a nation conceived in liberty carry its head high if it denies protection to the youngest and most vulnerable of its citizens? Can a country founded on God-given rights continue to thrive without understanding that life is a precious gift from our Creator? I believe that great nations and great civilizations spring from a people who have a moral compass.
I don't think a civilization can long endure that does not have respect for all human life, born and not yet born.
I will be in earnest. I will not equivocate, and I will not excuse. I will not retreat an inch, and I will be heard.
One thing I promise you, I will always take a stand for life.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Scott Bradley here. Most Americans are painfully aware that the nation is on the wrong track and in dire straits. Unfortunately, most political pundits only nibble around the edges when they claim to address the issues. Even worse, many of the so-called solutions are simply rewarmed servings of what got us into the mess we currently face. And the politicians think we're so gullible and naive that we'll buy their lies that they have reformed and now understand where they led us astray. Unfortunately, the truth of the matter is that they simply wish to continue to hold power. The solution to America's challenges is found in returning to the timeless principles found in the United States Constitution. My book and lecture series will reawaken in Americans an understanding and love of the principles which made this nation the freest, most prosperous, happiest, and most respected nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com. and order my book and lectures to begin the restoration of this great nation.
ladies and gentlemen, if contemporary America ever gets too much for you, you can always find salvation, at least I've found, in 50s and 60s music. Welcome back. We are talking, as we've been talking about for the past month, about these three very important cases. So we're going to keep Courtney on ice for just a second, and if she can stay, we'll give her a final word at the end of this segment. But, Paul, I want to toss it back to you. But before I do, give us all of that important contact information, because this guy is a guy you got to be following. His live streams, it infuses comedy and satire in with important political messages. And that is something that my friend Bob Whitaker, who has gone on to receive his eternal reward, former Reagan administration appointee Bob Whitaker, former professor Bob Whitaker. He wrote the book Why Johnny Can't Think. The left hates to be mocked. They hate to be ridiculed, and we got to do it. Ramsey Paul does it as well, if not better than anybody I know. How can they contact you, Paul?
Yeah, just I'm Ramsey Paul, if you Google me, and I have a YouTube channel, and I'm on Twitter, and I'd love to hear from everyone.
All right, well, there you have it. At Ramsey Paul at Twitter, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. So let's go back, let's go back to Rittenhouse, because Courtney was important because she's been following the Arbery trial, whereas I've been mostly focused on Charlottesville. You've been, of course, focused quite a bit on Rittenhouse. I was watching some of the reactions, Paul, to the verdict, and we mentioned, of course, Rittenhouse's reaction and our reaction to his reaction. But I was watching some of the people who were gathered outside of the courthouse. They literally, I mean, I saw this one black person who fell to the ground, and their eyes started rolling into the back of their heads, and there was others that were out there shucking and jiving, and there's just these crazy over-the-top responses. And then I saw the NBA and the NFL release these statements talking about white supremacy and so on and so forth, and how they stand with the peaceful protesters who, you know, were only just burning down Kenosha that night. That's peaceful, of course, but they stand with it. Can you live under the same government? Can you live in the same society with people whose opinion and mindset and worldview is so far not only removed from ours, but so far removed from logic and reason? How do you live in the same? How do you occupy the same space with people who are so far gone to believe this and truly believe it to the point where it causes them physical and psychological angst?
Yeah, I don't think you can. And I think the solution is we need to form our own communities. And maybe one day there will be a secession or the country will break apart. But for now, we just got to try to avoid this, because a lot of these people, they just hate us. They're not into, they don't care about the truth. The whole matter of the thing is they saw Kyle was a white man, and therefore he's evil, and they don't really care about the facts, and they just repeat stupid things that aren't true. But that doesn't bother them, because they're not interested in the truth. And a lot of these people that push it, like the media and these politicians, they're not dumb. They understand really what happened. We have video of it, and it wasn't the narrative that they're trying to push, but it just really makes you wonder if they can lie about this. And we saw this with our own eyes in Kenosha, and I believe they lied about January 6th. And what else have they lied about? You know, you have to understand what they do. They do everything for their political narrative. And I know the media used to always be biased, and I get that, but they're at a new level now. They're just strictly propagandists. It's like living in the Soviet Union with Pravda. It's just ridiculous, and that's the society we live in now. And it doesn't matter. You could show footage, say, no, the guy, he didn't attack anyone. He was just standing there, and then he was chased, and this guy hit him first. You could show him all that. It doesn't matter. They're not interested in facts. They're interested in a narrative. And in their narrative, if you're a white male, you have no right ever to fight back against their forces, even if in this case it wasn't black guys that attacked them. They were white, I guess. And so, but still, they were agents of the regime, basically. And so they're trying to make a lesson here. This is why it became a show trial.
Well, we've had a couple of show trials, if not more than that, that would make Comrade Stalin proud here in these so-called United States over the course of the past month. And that was actually another thing I was going to ask you about, is that is it coincidental to you? I guess it has to be, because there's no such thing as a conspiracy. Unless you conspired to commit racially motivated violence in Charlottesville, then everybody is a part of a conspiracy. But the fact that Charlottesville, McMichael's Arbery, Rittenhouse, and even January 6th, I just saw that the QAnon shaman got 3.5 years for participating in that violent insurrection at the Capitol, whereas, you know, the peaceful protest where they're burning down police stations and things like that, that's peaceful. But the shaman got 3.5 years. But all of these trials are coming to a head right before Thanksgiving. I mean, that's just... I can't say if there was any sort of hidden hand behind that, but it's remarkable nonetheless.
Yeah, it really is. Even in the Rittenhouse case, the people he shot is almost like, I don't know, it's probably a coincidence, but if you think about it, he shot the child molester, and it turned out he shot him in the groin. He shot the other guy that was trying to strangle his girlfriend, choke her to death. He shot him in the lung, so he suffocated to death. And the thief, the guy that was previously arrested for robbery and stealing stuff, he got shot. His arm got shot off. There's some symbolism there. That's kind
wow.
of
you know, I hadn't even thought about that. That's interesting. That's interesting.
I'm not saying that's anything, but it's just, it is kind of funny how all these trials came up at the same time. And, you got to be blessed when we have these victories, and the jury did do the right thing. And, it's easy to get, pessimistic, or what we call in our thing, black pill, but I think there's a lot of good things that come out. And I think a lot of Americans of all races, they don't want violence. They don't want to live in this type of society. I've talked to friends. I have a friend in Southern Missouri. He works in this business. When he told everyone he has a retail shop, they all burst out into cheers when they heard he was found not guilty. So
yeah.
And if you look at the videos, people are supporting Kyle all over the place. It's just like this Washington elite in their little bubble, the media and so forth, that really hate him, and they're supporting this totally 100% yeah. fake narrative.
Well, when the question is asked, are you going to believe the media or your lying eyes? Always believe your eyes. Always believe what you see and think for yourself. And we've heard the term, Paul, age before beauty. We'll let beauty go before age to close the show tonight. So, Courtney, you've been listening very patiently the last few minutes. A final word to you on all of the things we've been talking about. It can be Charlottesville. You've listened to all of Charlottesville with me. And, of course, going back on YouTube after the fact, after the day's proceedings in Charlottesville, and watching the Arbery trial, or it can be Rittenhouse. What do you want to say to close this hour before we go back to Rich Hamblin and offer an assessment and summation on Charlottesville in the third hour?
Sure. I guess my main focus as things went on got to be Arbery, the Arbery trial. I don't even know if it's called the Arbery trial. It's more the McMichael and the Bryan trial. But in closing, I mean, sometimes when I'm talking, sometimes on the show when I'm talking, I don't really think what I'm saying at the moment. I want to make a correction. I can't remember when I was talking earlier, when I was talking about the judges making poor decisions in the previous trials. I mentioned the Chauvin case, and I may have said the Charlottesville case, but I meant the James Fields case. I thought the judge made terrible decisions in the James Fields case and the Chauvin case. But anyways, to go back to your, you know, my closing points, yeah, I find these trials heartbreaking. You know, Travis McMichael has a 2-year-old son, and I hate it when anybody who's innocent ends up in prison. I don't, you know, no matter what race the person is, these stories are so heartbreaking to me. You know, years and years of somebody's life getting taken away when they don't deserve it, and we're just like Ramsey Paul was saying, we have to really pray for the right outcomes. And I like to be optimistic. I mean, I don't like to make predictions, but for the McMichael trial or the McMichael Bryan trial, you know, it does take place in the South and mostly white jury, with the exception of one person. So, you know, I try to.
I should say about that. Courtney, I got to say about this, because we won't cover it in the third hour. 11 white jurors, 1 black. That would be unusual. What happened in jury selection in that is that the blacks said they could not be fair and balanced. They could not go into that without a preconceived guilty verdict. And that's why you see the discrepancy there in the races on that particular jury. But go ahead with seconds remaining.
Okay. And I am a little, I know out of the white people on the jury, I know it's mostly female. It would be more ideal to have a lot of older white men on it. But since it's a southern state, you know, southern women tend to follow their men because we have strong conservative men down here. And so we follow them, I've noticed. And so I'm just hoping that the four men on the jury, I hope they're all white. I know there's one black somewhere, but I hope all four of the men are white, you know, maybe older. And I just hope that they take strong leadership skills. Ramsey Paul kind of went into that a little bit, too, about, you know, being a leader on a jury. And I know women are more sympathetic. I'm hoping that when they saw Travis McMichael up there crying and talking about his 2-year-old son, you know, I hope that that touches their sensitivities to see a fellow white Southerner up there.
Well, we want justice to be served, whatever it takes. And I think that's another case where it's always tragic when there's a loss of life, but I don't think that those people engage in any sort of premeditated murder. RamseyPaul.com. I'll be with Paul on Tuesday night on his stream, so check us out on Twitter to get the time and how you can connect. Courtney from Alabama, always a pleasure. We'll be back in the third hour. Thank you, guys.
Okay.